This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show number 147. Hi, you're listening to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. You can find us at pitchvision.com. You can call us on
0208 816 7691.
And you can email us on
coach@pitchvision.com.
My name's David Hinchliffe, and this week I'm joined by Mark Garraway. Well, it's with a little bit of a heavy heart this week, Mark, that we talk to each other after experiencing England collapse to a terrible result against Pakistan, certainly from the point of view of two Englishmen watching on. I think if you're a Pakistan fan, you'll be very pleased with the way the team is coming on. But, yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about batting collapses this week. What do you think? Mm.
Well, I mean, we've seen a few of them, haven't we, recently, with India in Australia and then England in Abu Dhabi and in Dubai. You know, so we have experienced them, and they're things that happen at every level and on a regular basis. And as coaches, we've all been involved in teams where you get almost a sort of plague of them, really. And it's, you know, you get to a certain situation in the game and, oh, God, here comes another batting collapse and all those sorts of things. But there are some things that you can do to try and counteract it, but I don't think that there's a secret recipe, and if there was, then somebody would be worth a lot of money now.
Yeah, I mean, I think because with a lot of these things, you know, it's not always completely about the mentality of the batting team, as it is about the skill of the bowling team. That sometimes you aren't going to stop them. But yeah, I think there's certain things that you could do. But I certainly, in the teams I've played, obviously at club level, I think you do get into a collapse mindset, don't you, sometimes? You suddenly start to think, oh, we're collapsing, and it starts to become a little bit self-fulfilling.
I completely agree. Completely agree with that. And I think one of the things that needs to be picked up here is somebody needs to recognise that, you know, recognise that it's getting to that point, whether it's your coach or your captain, or it can even come from just one of the players, get a bit of a feel for, you know, it's that feeling again, or that the atmosphere's changed or whatever. And then the only way to really get out of it is to change your behaviours. And often positive talk or being realistic with your talk and communication is a good way to go. And one of the things that I see when things aren't going well for batting sides is that people go quiet on the balcony. And that's been the great advent of TV, is that when batting collapses are happening, you get a lot of exposure into the changing room from the television cameras. And you see that people aren't communicating. You see that the heads are down. And talking to any of the neurolinguistic programmers and psychologists, the relationship between body language, actual language, and performance is a very strong one. So if somebody can recognize it, can bring it to the attention of everybody else, then, you know, you can look to change your language, change your body language, and see if that has a positive effect. And although I can't put my finger on any times where that's happened in teams that I've done and I've been working with specifically, what I do know is that the teams that I've worked with have had good body language, and so you sort of cut it off before it becomes a problem.
Yeah, it's the difference between, you know, the batsman walking in and the coach or the captain muttering, look, just don't get out, and someone walking in and thinking to themselves, right, you know, where are the areas where I'm going to pick up my runs here, where am I going to get the singles, where am I going to, which fielders can I push a little bit harder, because, you know, he's a little bit longer in the tooth and not quite as athletic as the guy who's fielding in the covers. And you can frame it in two different ways, can't you? You can just think to yourself, gosh, I'm really going to dig in here and hope I just don't get out. Or you can be positive, even if it's a dire situation, you can be positive in the way that you're playing.
Yeah, well, the most classic one that I've been involved with probably was Adelaide in 2006-07, when we'd been pretty dominant in the game. We'd scored a big first inning score and declared, and were 40-odd for one overnight going into the last day. I believe we set ourselves up to basically save the game, to make sure that we went into Perth one down rather than being two down. So we got very defensive in that morning session, which allowed Warnie to wheel away and bowl sort of, you know, 15, 16 overs into a rough outside leg stump and put our batters under a lot of pressure. Then we got to lunchtime, of course, and we had Garrett Jones and Ashley Giles in at the wicket at that point, and they went to a very positive approach, and which reaped the same reward for Australia. You know, I think Garrett hit one to gully, and I'm not sure how Ash got out, but we got bowled out for next to nothing, and a potentially winning situation turned into a devastating loss. And one of the things that I remember about that situation is that we did set ourselves up to save the game in that game, which was wrong. And we needed just to keep playing because we played 4 days of fantastic cricket. So almost reconnecting again with those 4 days that we'd had. And then secondly, the changing room went really, really quiet. Very, very quiet indeed, and nobody talked to each other, and before we knew it we were bowled out, and then I think Gilly went in there and smashed a quick 50 and the game was over, and effectively the series was over at that point.
Do you ever, is it something that you think that you could talk about as a strategy, you know, before it even happens, you know, sit down as a team and say, right, okay, there's going to be times of this season where, you know, we lose a couple of quick wickets. How are we going to react to that? If we decide beforehand, then we can be aware of it before it happens. Is there a case for that, do you think?
I think there is. And when you're working with young players, and again, you know, a lot of people that are listening to the podcast don't have the luxury of working with players on a, you know, 15 hours, 16 hours a week, yeah, like myself and many others do. But certainly in the professional ranks, you do a lot of this type of training before they get into competition. And it's conversations and sessions almost dedicated to dealing with setbacks, not necessarily, you know, batting collapses, but setbacks, because there are a lot of setbacks. You know, we don't go through a season without setbacks as an individual, as a group of players, as a bowling attack, as a batting attack, and as a team, and having some coping strategies to deal with that. So we did a lot of that. And I remember at Somerset, we were 25 for 5 in a one-day game in 2005, and it was on telly. And Charles Willoughby, who I'd desperately been trying to sign all winter, had got 5 for diddly squat against us. And we actually changed our body language halfway through that innings, halfway through our wickets. And Ian Blackwell got a few, and somebody else got a few. Now, we only got up to 100, but it gave us a fighting chance. And as it was, they won by 2 wickets. But we gave ourselves a fighting chance by really changing the way that we think, the way that we communicate, the way that we moved as a group and as individuals. And it just gave us a bit of an edge that we didn't have in those first few overs of the game, which put us back. And at one stage, we looked like we were going to win the game. And we ended up coming out of that game with a bit of confidence because we'd turned a situation which was dire into one which was potentially match-winning. And we took that into our next games and had some success.
Moving on, we are going to go into the interview section in a moment. And this week, we're talking to the latest coach to join Pitch Vision Academy with his Inspired Cricket manual, which is available at pitchvision.com right now. It's England under-17 coach Ian Brunchweiler. So we'll be talking to him after the music. Time now for the interview section on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, and I'm joined by Ian Brunchweiler, who is, among other things, the coach of the England under-17 squad and also the author of the Inspired Cricket Manual. Welcome to the show, Ian.
Hi, David. Very good to be here.
So it'd be interesting from a coaching point of view to hear a little bit about the kind of things that you've been doing recently with the England under-17 squad. What's the most recent things you've been up to with them?
Yeah, it's a really exciting program, actually, the England Development Program, which I'm working on, which covers the under-16s, 17s, 18s and 19s. And the premise of the program is actually to really put these guys under pressure and put them into challenging environments and give them the support that they need to help them deal with all of the challenges of the environment. And hopefully get them in a position whereby this accelerates their learning and gets them toughened up and exposed to things at an early age, so that as they go through to the various rigours of international and first-class competition, they're as well prepared as possible. Most recently, we just finished a 5-day training camp up at Loughborough where all the guys have been in, and they have some pretty long days, which are supposed to be challenging for them, covering technical, tactical, some physical stuff. They've got their S&C programs and ability programs, and also doing workshops with them so that they're learning to develop not only their strategies, such as their psychological strategies for coping with situations, but also learning about each other and about working as a team. So the training camp's been really, really good, and I think the feedback was that all the boys really enjoyed it.
If you're a club coach or a club player and you can't necessarily get access to the kind of resources that the England Performance Programme have, how can you take some of those examples and of training and bring them into your own game?
I think one of the biggest things is that you want to make sure that the guys are enjoying what they're doing. And that's at absolutely every level you're playing at. Certainly in my time working and coaching with the Hampshire professionals and working in club cricket myself, you know, every level I've ever coached at, I've always found that if guys are enjoying what they're doing and they can see the benefit of it, they are always most likely to get the most out of them. So that would be one thing that I think you can do at every level. And that's as much the approach of the coach themselves and the way they present themselves and the way they speak to players and trying to make it as fun as possible. So that's one thing I think you can do at any level without too much resource, just a bit of fun on your side. And another big thing for me is to try and make things competitive when you can. That's just such an important part of development as a sports person. Yes, we do need to look at the technical ability of players to underpin their game. But if we can make things competitive and challenge their skills, that's really going to accelerate their learning. And also you get the best out of them. It's like doing a fielding drill where you're just doing it and looking at the technical side of it. But then when you do it and you do it as a race or a game, A, everyone enjoys it, and B, you get that realistic competitive nature and the skills put under pressure as it would be in a game. So I don't think you necessarily need huge, you know, we're incredibly lucky on the England Development Programme to have an amazing resource and use the National Cricket Centre with all of its facilities. A lot of the time it can just be, you know, a coach with their mitt and their bat setting their cones out, and it's more that having that sort of emphasis on fun and competition, which doesn't necessarily need a huge amount of equipment to create that. So that I think is really important for everyone at every level.
And you carry that philosophy over into the Inspired Cricket Manual, the ebook, which is now available on Pitch Vision Academy. It's got some drills in there which can be used for whatever standards you're coaching or playing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was one of my major reasons for doing the Inspired Cricket project in the first place, was that I felt I was in such a fortunate position to be able to be working in a professional capacity and doing fielding drills and agility drills and batting and bowling drills on a daily basis with professionals and elite young players. As well as at the time when I was club cricket down at Burridge, down on the south coast. And really the principle was that I'm getting all these great drills, and there's so many coaches. I was seeing a few of the other sort of club coaches who are doing same old drills, and so I thought, look, let's write down a load of these drills, give people ideas, but also hope to inspire them just to take the basic drills on a step and make things fun and enjoyable for their players. And really, one of the things that I realised was I was doing exactly the same drills with the Burridge under 14 that I was with the Hampshire first team at the time, and similar drills with now with the elite sort of England development programme under 17. So the same drills, but it's just you pitching them at the right level for the type of player you're working with. So hopefully getting those down, those basic drills and down onto paper, and getting some simple to use diagrams so that you can set them up using the minimum of equipment, and then letting the coach use their inspiration and putting in their own variations and getting the players to have as much fun as possible.
Well, Ian, if people want to download a copy of the Inspired Cricket Manual, they can do that from pitchvision.com/academy right now. So it's highly recommended that if you are doing any kind of coaching or even if you're just playing and you want some new ideas, then go and have a look at the Inspired Cricket Manual to get a few ideas and start improving your game straight away. Thanks very much for your time on the show today.
Thanks very much. Great to speak to you. Cheers, David.
As is tradition on the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we are going to have your questions. And of course, the best question of the week that's read out wins a prize, which is an online coaching course, courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So I've got a couple of questions from the mailbag here, and Gareth and I are going to see if we can get to the bottom of the problems. The first one is a follow-up from a previous podcast where we were talking about mental training. It's from Brendan. And Brendan says, I heard about associated state in your podcast, but I can't find anything appropriate on the internet. Do you have any more information and links, please? So, Gareth, you were talking about associated state before. What have you got to follow up?
Yeah, well, there's fantastic. There's lots of stuff in there, but on the web, on the websites. But the best one that I've come across is www.rain.org, and in there it's a neurolinguistic programming website, and in there there's a glossary of terms that are used within NLP, and obviously with associated state being an A, it features pretty much near the front, so you don't have to scroll too far down to get to it. And in this, and I'm reading from it, there's some fantastic descriptions of what associated states are. So one of the descriptions on it is being inside an experience, seeing it through your eyes, fully in your senses. So seeing, hearing, smelling, feeling, basically. So it's very easy to visualize a situation and an experience that you've had, but not necessarily be inside the experience. You could maybe relive it in your head, looking at yourself as if you were on television, and that's a dissociated state rather than an associated state. So by stepping in, you're seeing it through your own eyes. So in a cricketing context, it could be that you're the batter and somebody's running up to bowl at you, and you're seeing it just as you did when you faced the bowler in the first place, or just as you will do when you face a bowler in 2 or 3 days' time. If you've not experienced that bowler before, you can still get yourself into what it's likely to be like, and how you're looking to play against it. So that's a pretty good description. Another way of looking at it is looking through your own eyes, hearing what you heard and the feelings that you felt when you were actually there. So those are the things that I meant by associated state, and the better visualizers are the ones that can get themselves into that position.
And this is, you forgive me if I misunderstood it, this, Gareth, but this is where you tie it into some kind of an anchor to trigger that all off. Is that right?
Yeah, NLP. One of the strategies within NLP is anchoring, and that's where you take, for example, if you're out of confidence and you're feeling a bit low and you're feeling maybe sluggish on your feet, you do a technique which is called anchoring, where you would get yourself into that state, but then you'd start loading yourself up with positive resources, which would weigh heavier on the poor state of having leaden feet, and replace that in your neurology, basically. So I would get somebody to think about being at their most confident, and when they're being at their most confident, I would put an anchor on them, which may be a physical anchor by touching their shoulder or placing my finger on the palm of their hand. Obviously, you'd need to pretty authorize that one before you did it, but that's the whole point of it. And you can load up a number of positive anchors, which will then outweigh or even just get rid of that negative feeling of leaden-footedness or lack of confidence. It's a fantastic tool. It's one that needs to be trained, and it isn't something you can just pick up. And the course that I went on was a 9-day course on NLP, but it was just a starter course at 9-day, with lots of work in between, and was very, very intensive as well. So we were working from 8 o'clock through to 6 o'clock and beyond most nights, trying to get these techniques down. So you're right in saying that anchoring is part of NLP, but it's something that I wouldn't say is available to everybody unless you've been on the course, and then obviously go for it and start using it.
And anyone who doubts the power of that kind of relating things together just needs to think about their favourite song That's the way that I describe it to people. If you think about your favorite song, you immediately have this sort of rush of memories of why it's your favorite song, and it makes you feel good. I mean, I'm just thinking about something now, and it's making me smile. So anyone who thinks that this isn't relevant to me, or it's too hard for me to do, or I don't see the point of it, just think about your favorite song, and you'll have a little smile on your face, and you'll realize the power of that kind of getting into that state.
Yeah, and it's something that's going to become more and more prevalent around the world in sport and in business, because it's a growing area, because the understanding is getting better and the application of it is getting better. I think initially sports scientists looked at it and thought, oh crikey, there's no science behind this, so we're not going to believe in it. But the great thing about NLP is it's so practical, and actually you can use it alongside some really conventional sports psychology techniques as well to add an extra bit of value.
The next question is from Utkarsh, and he's got a burning passion that he wants to ask about. He says he's 20 years old, and from childhood he was a good player, but because he decided to concentrate on his studies, he didn't want to take it any further. But now he wants to become a professional cricketer, but he feels like he's lost 6 years to his education, and now he's worried that he can't make it as a professional cricketer with that big gap in his training. So he wants to know how he can become a good cricketer. What are your thoughts on that, Gareth?
It's difficult because it's 6 years out, but as we talked before on this program, you can do 6 years worth of training that's good training, and you can do 6 years of training that's bad training. Mm. So you can claw it back in a very short space of time if you do very deliberate practice, and it's very focused, and it's very concentrated on the things that you need to do to get better. So I'm a big believer that you should never write anybody off irrespective of their circumstances, and certainly as a coach I would never do that, and always be there to try and help them and to give them the options which can get them there a little bit quicker. Certainly in this case you are up against time a little bit, but it's not a lost cause by any stretch. One of the things that will have a positive effect on this type of situation is if physically you've been doing something else that has kept you in good physical conditioning, because one of the biggest challenges is when the body loses its physical literacy and physical competence, the ability to take on skills, particularly if you're catching up on 6 years worth of technical sessions that other people have done and you haven't. If you're physically literate, if you've got good physical competency, then you'll pick up those skills heck of a lot quicker. So I would always be very encouraged if somebody say, and I've had this example in Ireland, a couple of lads that were very promising cricketers that played Ireland youth cricket were also fantastic rugby players, and have joined up a few years ago with the Ulster Rugby Academy, which is run fantastically up in Ulster by Gary Longwell. He's a magnificent academy director. But they've done a really strong physical program. And yes, it has been rugby orientated, but there's some really good components in there. Now, maybe one of them, out of the two of them, won't get a professional contract. And then it would be very interesting, almost as a case study, to see how long it would take to regain those cricket skills that haven't been worked on in the last few years, and also to see whether they pick up skills very, very quickly as a result of their physical competency, and I would suggest that they would. So I don't think there's been too many case studies in it so far, but if you are physically competent, then you give yourself a much better chance of picking it up quickly.
Yes, it's very individually dependent. The other thing I would add to that, or from my point of view, I mean, I can't disagree with any of that or really add to it that much. But what I can say is that it's important that we get a lot of questions like this on the show, and we get a lot of people who are very, very passionate about their ambitions to make it as professional cricketers. And it can become a little bit of an obsession for some people, and that's where working hard towards a goal starts to become something which is a little bit negative. You have to have balance in life, in all things, and if your focus is on any one single thing, be it cricket or anything else, then you're not you're not being a well-balanced, well-rounded person, and that can affect your game. You know, often people talk about cricketers who are robotic and all the rest of it, and they cite being 100% focused on cricket with virtually nothing else. You have to not only just be able to move and be athletic, which are skills which are transferable, but you know, you also need to learn about a little bit about life, you know, responsibilities of life, and you know, and build up your confidence in by being able to be good at more than one thing, because you never know what, especially with cricket, you never know what might happen. You know, if you get a career ending injury at the age of 19, then that's the end of that idea. So you've got to be well-rounded, well-balanced, and you have to know that the passion is good and the drive is good, but as much as you can, keep it in perspective. A small example of that that I often cite, just from a club level, is a guy I used to play cricket with many years ago, who was sort of well known for being kind of a dour opening batsman, very serious about his cricket, you know, very, very important to him that he would make runs, and often would score very slowly because he felt like he prided his wicket so high that he concentrated on not getting out rather than scoring runs quickly. And he got married one summer, and he went away on a holiday for 2 weeks, and he came back and he smashed the most blazing 100 the club has seen for many a year. And really, I mean, for me, what that said is that, you know, he'd got the balance right. He'd got things into perspective, and he was on top of the world because he just got married, and that was nothing to do with cricket, and that suddenly boosted his game. So if you want evidence of getting balance, to make sure that you do as well as you can possibly do, then that guy is a perfect example.
Absolutely. And I think the word that was most important in that was perspective. And it's vital as players, doesn't matter what level we have, we have perspective, and that we recognise that, you know, getting out is part of the game. And if you're a top three batter, you've got a 93% chance of getting out every time you walk to the wicket. So, you know, get that into your head. It's great to be disappointed because you have got out, but equally put it into perspective, because there's a good chance it's going to happen next time. And actually, the most important thing is what you do before that moment comes around when you are out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Someone said to me once, you're always going to get another go. So, which is a nice way of looking at it.
Now it's time for the soapbox, and as you'll know, every week one member of the team has the opportunity to voice their concerns, their passions, their anger out for a minute, and this week it's time for David.
Well, this week I wanted to talk about the volunteer coach and the volunteer administrator, the guys who work in clubs all over the world who don't get paid, but they put in a huge amount of passion. There's a guy at our club who will be leaving to Australia, and at one point, not too long ago, he was pretty much running the club by himself. He had six positions on the committee officially he was doing, and he was also a coach of our under-14s, and he managed somehow to keep it going despite holding down a full-time job and having a family. And it's people like that, not just in the UK, in India, Pakistan, Australia, all over the world, who do an amazing job at keeping cricket going and bringing on the next generation of cricketers to play at the highest level. So praise to John, and praise to everyone who does their bit at club level. So that's the end of the show for this week. But before we go, we are going to have the competition winner for the week, which is, of course, a online coaching course delivered by Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. The best question of the week wins that prize. So this week we had Brendan and his Associated States follow-up. And Utkarsh talking about his passion to become a professional player despite having missed a few years of training. So which one did you like best, Gareth?
I liked Brendan's question in particular. It's nice to know that people are really interested in some of the things that we talk about on the show, and they're willing to follow up. And I'd encourage anybody that wants any further information to send the questions in, because it means that we're doing a decent job on the show. And thanks very much, Brendan, for that question.
Yes, thank you, Brendan. And by the way, we will put the links that we talked about in the show, and probably a couple of other extra ones in as well, just to make sure that you get those. We'll put those in the show notes, which you can find at pitchvision.com. If you want to send in your own question, you can do so by giving us a call or sending us an email. And Gareth, you've got the details there of that, haven't you?
I have. Give us a call on 0208 816 7691. And email us on coach@pitchvision.com.
And we're getting inundated at the moment with calls and emails. So make sure that your question is a good one, because otherwise we're not going to get round to answering it. If you want to send us a question via Twitter, you can do. We're at PV Cricket Coach. Or if you want to stick a question up on our wall on Facebook, just do a search for Pitch Vision Academy in Facebook. You can find us in there. We do recommend that you subscribe to the show. It comes out every single Friday, come rain or shine. Rain and bad light never stops play when it comes to the Pitch Vision Academy cricket show. It's always a flat deck, and it's always a beautiful day, even when the rain is pouring down outside. So you can do that by going over to iTunes, doing a search for Pitch Vision Academy, and clicking on subscribe, or going to pitchvision.com and finding the podcast in there. And you've got the link to the feed if you want to put it on your phone or something like that. That's all for this week. So until next week, we'll see you next time. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, David.